My name is Joe Matters. I'm an American on the 2018 Freedom Flotilla in its effort to break the blockade of Gaza. If you're watching this, we've been intercepted by the Israeli occupation forces and are being forced against our will to go to Israel. Please contact your representatives in Congress and the State Department and ask have them demand for our Israel to have our immediate release.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Welcome all to another live edition of the Daily Wrap-Up. The footage you just saw, and for those of you who haven't, you can scroll back and take a look. I'll probably air it at the end again, is a shot of Joe Matters, who was actually on the USS Liberty back when that was taking place a while back, and which kind of makes this whole story a lot more profound, and was just recently on the Al-Ada of the Freedom Flotilla. I always want to say flotilla. It's actually pronounced flotilla. And it was aggressively and forcefully hijacked by Israel. And I'm bringing this story to begin today because I want to follow up on it, because I reported on it right when it was taking place. And it turns out there's a lot more information now coming out showing not only how Israel aggressively violated international law, but how it actually injured a lot of these peaceful protesters and politicians and activists on this peace flotilla trying to bring aid to the Gazan people who are being wildly oppressed by Israel. Now, sadly enough, that video only has a couple hundred views, and he's pleading with the international community to do something about what's going on. And it's a very sad story, and it's something that really gets under my skin, as all of you know. The continued, disgusting atrocities committed by the Israeli government, and how nobody wants to talk about it in the mainstream media, and how the United States government is completely complicit in what's going on here. So let's get into the first story, and this is one that's talking about, you know, the flotilla, as well as getting into some of the more horrible things that are being committed by Israel in general. So the first story of the day, coming from consortiumnews.com, entitled Gaza Flotilla Ship Al-Ada Violently Seized by Israelis. USS Liberty Survivor Amongst Those Captured. Israeli soldiers in international waters, which is important, boarded the Al-Ada ship headed to Gaza to deliver relief supplies on Sunday, detaining everyone on board, including a USS Liberty survivor. After beating and tasering some passengers, unarmed, peaceful passengers, according to an eyewitness account. Only two of the 22 passengers on the ship have been released, with the rest being held in given prison in Israel. In prison in Israel, the flotilla's organizer said on Monday. Interestingly enough, one of those released, Zohar Chamberlain, I believe is how you pronounce his name, he's an Israeli citizen. What I would argue, the other one was probably also the other Israeli citizen that was on the ship. Doesn't mean that they were, you know, okay with this, but I found it interesting that seemingly the Israeli citizens were allowed to leave, even though they were part of the very same protest. They contested an Israeli Defense Force statement that the ship had been captured without exceptional incident. So again, coming back to this entire point, that there are Israeli people, Jewish people, who are appalled by what's going on here. For all those that continue to try to frame this as just Jewish people being bad and evil, the reality is there are plenty of good people in Israel who actually think what's going on there is absolutely atrocious, just like we do. And as he said, one of the Israeli citizens who was released is now speaking out, because the claim of Israel when it happened was that it happened without exceptional incident. That's their quote. And now they're contesting that. He went on to say, quote, people on board were tasered and hit by masked IOF soldiers. We did not get our passports or belongings before we got off the boat. Do not believe reports of peaceful interception. He went on to say in a statement to the organizers that essentially, I mean, we have to realize that this was a peaceful protest. They were in international waters, about 60 miles in the middle of the ocean, away from the considered the area of Israel. and they illegally boarded this ship, tasered people, and hit these peaceful protesters. I mean, this is a disgusting violation of international law, a disgusting human rights violation, and I haven't seen a single word of this outside of very specific outlets. She went on to say, quote, that she saw blood on the deck of the Al Adha as the last participants were being dragged off the ship. That's her quote, according to their statement. And said a second Israeli passenger, Yonatan Shapira, I'm terrible with these names, but I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, were charged with attempting to enter Gaza and conspiracy before being released for trying to bring about $15,000 worth of medical aid, which is just basically a Band-Aid on a bullet hole with what's really going on there. And they're charging them with conspiracy to enter Gaza to help these people. And speaking of the seizure of the Al Adha, the flotilla organizers said, quote, a military attack on a civilian vessel is a violent act and a violation of international law. Taking 22 people from international waters to a country which is not their destination constitutes an act of kidnapping. Think about that. Which is also unlawful under the International Convention of the Law of the Sea. Just, I mean, let that resonate for a second and understand what's really going on here. Israel went out in the middle of the ocean and basically, as a pirated, seized illegally, violently, a ship full of peaceful protesters simply trying to bring medical aid to an oppressed people. This is a disgusting story, and the Israeli government should be ashamed of themselves, but they're not, because this is commonplace for what's going on here. As I told in the last story when I talked about this, what happened to Turkey years ago, people were actually killed trying to do the very same thing. These people know this. Involved in the flotilla, they're well aware of what can happen to them, and they're doing it anyway because they believe that this is wrong, because it is wrong. This is a gross violation of international law, and Israel needs to be held accountable for this, and they most likely won't. I've talked about this so many times about what's going on in Israel and what they're doing, not just on the sea, but during the Great March of Return, the people that have been killed, thousands of protesters, innocent women and children as well, but as well as journalists. This says second Palestinian journalist, which is a while ago, there's well more than two by now, journalists from around the world being killed, Palestinians and otherwise, simply for trying to monitor and report on what's actually going on. And they're being killed. As well as doctors being killed, one from Canada, simply trying to help the Palestinian people as the IDF chooses to shoot them down. Or medics on the ground trying to help people that are in pain. There's more than enough evidence to show you these things actually happening. These medics and individuals and peaceful people trying to help the people in pain being killed and murdered and shot down with no weapons in their hands. This is the reality of what's going on. They point and say, oh, Hamas. Yeah, but Hamas didn't make you shoot an unarmed Palestinian nurse. Hamas didn't make them shoot a doctor from Canada. Oh, collateral damage. But that doesn't make it okay. These people are committing human rights violations. These are war crimes, people. We have evidence from globalresearch.ca says an IDF, a general, an Israeli general says IDF snipers ordered them to shoot Palestinian children as a threat to security of Israel. We have the video, which I won't show now. I've shown many times, of the Irish member of parliament reading off statement after statement of Israeli government saying that these people are less than human, that they don't deserve anything, which completely contradicts everything that they're saying, or rather what the United States government is saying, and people are trying to frame this as. This is a disgusting story and needs to get put out there. We need to recognize what's really going on here and how it's being covered by the main Western media, it completely ignoring it because they're an ally. It is a truly disgusting story. It just horrifies me to see this continue to go on as it gets absolutely no coverage. I mean, I've covered this so many different times. And these people, average individuals trying to help them, were captured, seized, tasered, beaten, dragged off the ship, and put in prison for breaking no laws. Where's the outrage of the United States government? Why are they not invading Israel to protect the average people? And this isn't just people from Palestine or people from Israel. This is a multitude of people from all over the world, from all kinds. That was an American citizen on that video that we saw in the beginning. What's happening? It's just, this story gets under my skin, as I'm sure you can tell. Please spread this around. I'll play that video again in the end. Please talk about this and get this out there so people can realize the real nature of the Israeli government today and what they're actually doing to average people for simply trying to help the people that they're currently committing genocide on. It's a horrifying concept. Moving on to the next story, coming from the Foundation for Economic Education, entitled "By Denying Ross Albright's Petition, the Supreme Court Has Essentially Nullified the Fourth Amendment." This is also a frustrating story, and it's something that you could argue that the Fourth Amendment's been nullified for a long time now. But as I always try to point out, the Constitution does not give us anything. It simply outlines our inherent rights, or some would say our God-given rights. But they are being nullified or ignored by our government for a long time now. But what this is talking about is a recent petition, which we'll get into, essentially nullifies the Fourth Amendment in general as it pertains to the age of the internet. So on June 28, 2018, the Supreme Court denied a petition by Silk Road founder Ross Albright that would have forced the court to address where government surveillance and the Fourth Amendment intersect online. 34-year-old Albright, who is currently serving a double life sentence for a nonviolent crime, petitioned the court to review his case. Think about that for a minute, though. A double life sentence for a nonviolent crime. Well, we just talked about a pedophile getting 28 months for having over 60,000 files of pornography, violent child pornography, 28 months. Dennis Hassert, called a serial child molester by the judge, serves 13 months of a 15-month sentence. Something's a little off here, wouldn't you say? So he's serving a double life sentence for a nonviolent crime. He petitioned the court to review his case, specifically whether the evidence used to arrest and convict him was seized constitutionally or not. The evidence in question was obtained through warrantless government surveillance of the wireless router in his private home. The court's refusal to review Albright's case affirms an outdated legal precedent that essentially nullifies the Fourth Amendment in the age of the internet. In 2011, Albright created the Silk Road, as many of you know, an online marketplace that allowed individuals to create accounts in which to buy and sell goods anonymously and securely. As some individual user accounts began to sell illegal items such as drugs, false identification documents, and computer hacking software, the site caught the attention of the media and subsequently the government. The government began monitoring internet posts from the site's administrator and were eventually able to link an email address, an internet protocol IP address, and residential address back to him. With that information, the government sought authorization, not a warrant, under the Electric Communications Privacy Act, the ECPA, to track Albright's internet traffic information via a pen register and a trap and trace device known as a pen trap. Authorization under the ECPA does not require probable cause, just merely the belief that the information is likely is to be obtained, not even certain, would be relevant to an ongoing investigation. So did not require probable cause. It just requires the belief that the information they likely are to obtain would be relevant to a possible ongoing investigation. If it seems flimsy to you as well, you're right, because that is. Especially in this age where we think we have all these rights protecting us from warrantless investigations. The pen trap that was secured without a warrant or showing probable cause allowed the government to isolate and identify the Media Access Control, or MAC, address of Albright's laptop. Using that MAC address, the government once again sought another pen trap, this time to be applied to Albright's laptop. Once again, the government was awarded the authorization without showing probable cause and without a warrant. 2 weeks later, the government's constant warrantless surveillance produced enough evidence, as they see it, to secure an arrest warrant for Albright. Although Albright was just the founder of the website, and not one of the individuals creating the accounts to buy and sell drugs or whatever else, the government charged him with numerous counts of drug trafficking and other related offenses. Let that set in as well. Somebody who creates a free market, an actual free market for people to come and do what they please without government overarching hands, which there are things that they should be held accountable for within that. Absolutely. They do something that puts someone in harm's way. They do something that is illegal in some regard, yes, they should be held accountable. But you know where I stand on when it comes to drugs and things like that. Anything that's not harming somebody, But the reality is he sets this up, stands back, and people do things on there, and he's being charged. There's clearly this entire case from the get-go, for those that are familiar, is setting a precedent in the internet age for what they can hold you accountable for online, even if you're not involved in it. Setting something up that's outside government control is the ultimate point. Now, this, I recommend you read this article for yourself. It's a lot of detail, but it goes into essentially there was a case that was setting a big precedent in regard to his case, and they waited until the moment that it was done, and they used it to put it forward a petition to basically review his case once again because it related directly to what they were doing, and they immediately dismissed it. And the court's decision doesn't just leave Albright in prison. It also leaves in place what the petition was talking about, the third-party doctrine. As again, I recommend you read the article for more information on that, as the legal precedent for cases involving warrantless government surveillance and the internet. The third party doctrine is what was used essentially to bypass your constitutional rights. And as the author ends, ultimately, given the courts an inaction in this regard, the price Americans will have to pay for participating in today's society will be their Fourth Amendment rights. So let that resonate with you. As someone who's currently serving a double life sentence for nonviolent crimes, who didn't actually commit any crime other than creating a free market for people to interact with each other, is essentially being used to continue to violate your constitutional rights. So let that set in. Let that resonate. Yet another story that's being ignored by a lot of people, even including the independent media today, as they're focused on a lot of unsubstantiated claims, that really does necessitate your attention. But I digress. We'll get into some other stories as I will leave more of my rants for the end of the show. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, entitled State of Emergency in Michigan After Public Discovers Entire Town Has Toxic Water. I was just talking about this. As our infrastructure crumbles in this country, as we spend more than the rest of the world combined on our military with your tax dollars, this should be going to this. Michigan officials declared a state of emergency on Sunday after high levels of what are called PFAs, I won't even try to pronounce the actual chemical, were discovered in Kalamazoo County tap water. The declaration was actually made several days after the toxic compound was found in the water, which is kind of funny when you, in a macabre way, that they allowed people to drink it for two more days after they recognized that it was a toxic compound. Government bureaucracy for you. Officials detected a concentration of 1,587 parts per trillion of PFAS substances, while the EPA's maximum recommendation dose is 70 parts per trillion. That's quite a lot more. Recent research by the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, however, suggests that single-digit levels of the compound can cause health problems. Just yet another reason to not trust the EPA or even any government institution that basically tells you, yeah, glyphosate's okay and a little bit of an amount in your body. It's not, actually. It's very dangerous. So were all these things. As I tell you that 70 parts per trillion are okay, but another agency simply saying, no, they're wrong, it's single digits, is very dangerous for you. But now they're finding it in 1,587 parts per trillion in their tap water. PFAS compounds can be found in food packaging, commercial household products, especially those with Teflon and other non-stick surfaces. They are an emerging public health threat across Michigan, apparently, having contaminated the water supplies of over 20 communities across the state. The compounds can cause, apparently, low infant birth weight, immune system issues, cancers, and thyroid hormone disruptions. Cancers. Get that? You catch that in there? As more, about one in every two people will have cancer before they die in this country? It's pretty shocking. I wonder where that's coming from, as the government ignores problems just like this. Meanwhile, water supplies in New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, New York, and elsewhere have also tested positive for elevated PFAS levels. Think about that. And it's still happening. All the way back in 2013, an analysis of data collected in 2007, so it took that much longer to analyze the data all the way to 2013, but even from then to now, it was found back then that over 20% of U.S. water supplies contain PFOA, a more dangerous form of PFAS. In 2013, from information collected in 2007, I bet most of you have never even heard of this. And 20% of the U.S. water supply is currently contaminated with that. How does this? Why are people not marching through the streets? Where's my tax money going? And it says while 28% of water supplies have some form of contaminant in the perfluorinated compound family, which is what that is. Just that one family. Derek Brose did an excellent coverage of basically how most of the country's water is contaminated to one degree or another. Really resonate on that. All of these stories where our tax dollars are supposed to go to things like this. Fixing the water infrastructure, fixing potholes in the streets, paying for our teachers and buying new school books for our kids. But no, it goes to invading countries around the world. The vast majority of it does. Is that okay with you? It's not okay with me. This is horrifying to think about. That one sticks with me. Data collected in 2007, which took all the way to 2013 to analyze, found that 20% of the water was contaminated with this, and we still don't even know about this until a state of emergency breaks out in Michigan. It's just disgusting. This kind of stuff has to make us realize what's really going on today. I'm sure as hell not hearing this anywhere else, besides the independent media that I'm covering it from. It's pretty frustrating. Let's move on to the final story of the day. Coming from ZeroHedge.com, entitled Facebook Has Discovered Ongoing Political Influence Campaign Just in Time for Midterms. Shocking. So Facebook announced today that it has identified a coordinated political influence campaign comprised of dozens of inauthentic accounts and pages that are believed to be engaging in political activity ahead of November's midterm elections, according to New York Times. While they aren't sure that it's those pesky Russians, company officials told lawmakers that it might be. According to them, in a series of briefings on Capitol Hill this week, the company told lawmakers that it detected the influence campaign as part of its investigations into election interference. Seems like they don't do those investigations when we have somebody testifying in front of Congress about how they were paid to manipulate the machines back in 2015 or 14 or whenever that was, which we showed the video of. But again, back to this story, because this, to them, what matters on Facebook. It has been unable to tie the accounts to Russia, which I find interesting they even say it like that. Like their first job is to try to tie this to Russia somehow, because that's what's important. Not that it happened or it even is real or not, but tie it back to Russia as best we can. It goes on to say whose internet research agency was at the center of the indictment earlier this year for interfering in the 2016 election. See, all they say is indictment because it hasn't even come to fruition yet. Indictments can come out of anywhere, especially when the people involved are blatantly corrupt. Indictments for people that have not even been seen, one of which showed up, and they still have backtreaded and forced it from happening. Mueller has continued to make it not come to fruition yet. Somebody actually showed up from Russia and said, I'm here to defend myself. I'll prove your claims wrong. And they said, whoa, we're not ready. And still, at this moment, they haven't gotten to it yet. But company officials told Capitol Hill that Russia was possibly involved. Possibly. Now they're all running with it. Another Russia hack, giving them another nonsensical fuel for this horrible fire. Facebook says it discovered coordinated activity promoting politically charged issues such as abolish ICE, championed by Democratic Socialist Alexander Ocasio-Cortez, as well as an upcoming sequel to last year's Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. The Times noted that the efforts echo those in 2016 to stoke racial tensions surrounding the Black Lives Matter movement. And according to Bloomberg, the social media giant removed a whopping 32 such accounts today, a whole 32, saving countless Americans from having their thoughts manipulated. In February, following the indictment of 13 Russian nationals and two businessmen for election meddling, apparently, one of which has shown up to court, which is what I was saying, essentially with nothing happening of it yet, Facebook VP of advertising Rob Goldman pointed out that the majority of advertising purchased by Russians on Facebook occurred after the election and was designed to sow discord and divide amongst Americans, something which Americans really don't have much problem doing for themselves based on the actions of their government. This is the kind of nonsense they want the masses obsessing over as U.S. allies commit mass genocide and aggressively violate international law with impunity, while the U.S. calls out other nations for a fraction of the crime, most of which is probably fabricated or completely altogether made up, while U.S. infrastructure falls apart, poisoning the very water we drink, most not realizing this is what taxes should be for. This is the inherent rights that we have are routinely ignored and invalidated That's the one that truly frustrates me as people continue to ignore as they take these things away from us that they have no right to take away in the first place. The world is quite literally shifting under your feet, and many are too emotionally outraged about engineered divides to even take notice of how far we are today from that iconic image of the United States we were all forcefully indoctrinated with as children. They want you angry. They want you outraged. They want you focused, as long as it's on anything but them and the country they are stealing out from under you. Thank you for tuning in today. I love you all. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.